The U.S. Central Bank is tasked with keeping inflation low and stable. Well, is that the path they're actually on with their current policy? You're listening to SDPB's In the Moment. I'm your host, Lori Walsh. Now imagine you are at the grocery store looking at a bag of grapes. The price, $12 a bag. At the same time, you get a notification on your phone. A news organization is reporting that the U.S. Central Bank is determined to get inflation back to the 2% target. They haven't reached that target in 5 years. Do you buy the grapes? Maybe even using a credit card, encourage that prices will come down. Or do you walk away, perhaps even losing a little faith in the Fed's determination to control inflation? Macroeconomist Joe Santos says that to anchor inflation, the Fed needs to consider the true expected inflation rate when setting interest rates. So I asked him to explain. Now, Joe Santos directs and is professor of economics in the Ness School of Management and Economics at South Dakota State University. And you can find all his data and analysis on his Substack platform. You search for Joseph M. Santos. We're going to get into some really technical stuff. So before we do that, I wanted to ask you how inflation is impacting you. Is there an area in your life that it's showing up?
Yes, actually. One that I can think of is just what it's doing to my real disposable income. We're all paid in dollars, of course, but the purchasing power of those dollars changes with inflation. All of this inflation that we've been talking about on this show has been eroding the purchasing power of our disposable income, and mine just as much as everyone else's. So traveling or grocery shopping, buying gas, but really everything, because inflation is a macroeconomic phenomenon. So if you think about it long enough, you'll notice it imposing its burdens on you in every aspect of your commercial life. So sorry if that was a long answer, but yes, yeah. I noticed.
And for me, it's made me have to think so much more. I have to slow down. At the grocery store, the prices are higher. And since I have a small household, I'm really thinking about waste. You know, what can I buy that I can consume within the reasonable amount of perishable time so I'm not wasting the food product or my money? And
right.
it over time, it has started to add an increase of stress. Mm-hmm. To my life, because I'm like, okay, normally I move faster because I know what the prices are. Now that I don't, I have to slow down, which means I have less time, which means I am more hesitant to spend.
That's
now,
right.
It all is cumulative on our lives. So if you think inflation doesn't matter, think again.
Yeah. It really does. And, you know, and then if you add to that, you know, in some ways in macroeconomics, we talk about inflation in a very tidy way. It's, you know, all prices rise by the same percentage. In reality, of course, some are rigid, some are not. So yeah, now you really need to think about relative prices in ways maybe you didn't as much before. You know, toothpaste might go up faster than, I don't know, watermelon. And so now you get these relative price effects that it really demands some thinking at the kind of microeconomic level. You know, how should I allocate my budget? What makes the most sense? And so all of that is time spent thinking about, you know, traffic lights when you should be thinking about the road, right? So it's distorting prices, it's distorting signals, thus the traffic light metaphor. And it's just inefficient to have to think about this. We should be thinking about something else, right? As we always say, monetary policy should be boring.
So let's get into some of the nitty-gritty of this post. Sure. On Monday Macro here on your Substack. I have it pulled up and I'm looking at some of these terms and definitions. What do you think the average listener needs to understand about what kind of inflation we're talking about and what your key argument here is, which is the same argument you've been making for a while now, which is that these interest rates should really go up. You're demonstrating through charts and graphs and really digging in deep to the policy what's maybe being missed here.
The debate around Fed policy right now, understandably, is a debate around interest rates, right? So the Fed should raise rates or keep them the same, or it's interest rates, interest rates, interest rates. The interest rates we're talking about fall into a class of rates we call nominal rates. You and I have talked about this before. So the rate is 4% or 5%. That means I give you $100 in a year, you give me 104, or you give me 105. But 4 and 5% just reflect the sort of payback rate of money after I lent you money. But it doesn't reflect purchasing power. And to really get at that, we need to think about real interest rates. And no one's talking about that because, as you said in your intro, that's pretty turgid, abstract stuff. But a real interest rate is an interest rate, a nominal interest rate adjusted for inflation. And that's what I'm suggesting we maybe look at as you say, yet another way, as another month goes by, another way to argue that this case for lower interest rates really doesn't have any foundation. So, point is, rather than asking, is, let's say, the federal funds rate right now, let's call it 3.75%, is that the right rate? Well, I don't know, because 3.75 is a nominal interest rate. It's just a money payback rate. But really, if we want to think about what drives economic activity and maybe stokes inflation, we got to think about the rate that, let's say, a borrower really cares about. And it's the real rate. It's the rate that represents purchasing power payback. So if, let's say, the real rate is three, that means if you give me $100, I'm going to give you back your $100 with enough interest so that you have 3% more purchasing power. You can buy 3% more stuff with the money I gave you back after the loan matures than the money you gave me, right? That's what we really feel. Back to our earlier discussion about how we're feeling the effects of inflation. So the point is, we really should be looking at the real interest rate. We should be adjusting the inflation rate, forgive me, the interest rate that we're all arguing about, adjusting it for inflation, look at that rate. And then we can argue about that rate, but at least the real rate will capture purchasing power. And so that's what borrowers and lenders care about. And so if we're asking, are interest rates too low? They're going to stoke spending and inflation. Well, we need to look at a real interest rate. And same on the other side. If we're saying it's too high, it's going to stave off demand and it's going to, destroy demand, as folks like to say. Well, we got to look at the real interest rate.
To look at the real interest rate means we have to admit to ourselves what inflation really is doing right now and how long it might be doing that, right? So we've talked before about the oil shock and the US war with Iran. There's a sense, oh, that, might end and therefore, prices will go back as normal, so we should ignore that. And you said, no, that's not, we cannot ignore what inflation is really doing. So some of this is political, of course, because we know the president wants the interest rate to be lowered. We know the Fed chairman, even the new Fed chairman, has said, we are an independent agency and we are still going to make that decision independently. How much of this is about our unwillingness to, or inability to know how fast some of these things are shifting geopolitically?
It's connected, and it's a really good question because it's really how we get a real interest rate from a nominal interest rate. So here's the sort of simple relationship. To get a real interest rate from a nominal interest rate, you have to subtract expected inflation. So in other words, if the nominal interest rate, the stated rate, the sort of money payback rate is 6%, how do I know what it is in terms of purchasing power? I got to subtract what I expect inflation to be. And all that stuff you just mentioned gets in our head and shapes our expectation of inflation. So, and this is really what's at issue, is we've been saying for a while now, I've been arguing that we probably expect higher inflation than, say, 2%. Right? We see what's going on. We see, let's say, the attacks on Fed credibility and its independence, and, as you said, sort of the political narratives that are being bantied about. All of this leads us, I would think, to question whether the central bank can restore inflation to 2%. Put differently, it leads me to think about future inflation at a higher level. All right, why does that matter? Well, because again, if let's say we have a stated rate of six, If I want to get the real rate, I subtract in expected inflation. Well, if I'm expecting 2%, I get a real rate of 4. 6 minus 2 is 4. But if I'm expecting 5%, because all this stuff is really getting in my head and I'm starting to panic and all this, I get a real rate of 1. Okay, what's the difference? Well, a real rate of 1 tells me borrow the money, buy whatever it is, invest in the capital. The real rate's only 1. It's a good deal. And so if expected inflation is high, the real rate is low, it stimulates spending. And so what I'm arguing or proposing we all begin to realize is that if we think expected inflation is unanchored, if we think we might all be thinking about higher inflation for longer, that is tantamount to thinking that real interest rates are lower for longer. That's stimulative, that's expansionary. So if you're the central bank, you're actually in a monetary policy stance that's essentially promoting the inflation, not fighting it. So again, it's another case for why you either have to raise nominal rates right now if you're the Fed, or you've got to get inside our heads and get us to believe that inflation is going to be lower in the near future. That second one, there really isn't a dial or a level to do that with, or a lever. There's really no instrument to get in our heads in that way at a day-to-day operational level. What they do have is a short-term interest rate, a nominal rate, which they could raise.
So what I hear you say is, and correct me if I'm wrong, if they keep doing what they're doing now, inflationary pressures will continue. They're not helping.
Right. So if they continue to sort of look past the inflation, argue there's nothing to see here when, some of these more recent readings came in near 4%, depending on how you measure it. If that's the position they take, then perhaps that just fuels our expectation that inflation is higher. And again, that matters for its own reasons, but it also matters when you're considering the loan. You're considering whether to borrow the money to buy something, to essentially create aggregate demand, right? That's stimulative. If you reason the real rate is very low because you reason inflation, well, intuitively, it'll erode your burden of debt because by the time you got to pay it back, it won't mean anything. That's the intuition. So if that's the world I think I'm going to encounter when it's time to pay back this loan, that's a world that favors me, the borrower. And so I'm likely to borrow. So if what you're trying to do is slow down the expansion of aggregate demand, which of course occurs through the credit channel because you lend people money to spend it, you want that real rate to be high. But high expected inflation lowers that real rate. So I think that's a it's a nuance, but it's something important to recognize. And back to your initial question, why talk about this? Because no one is. Everyone is focused on that nominal rate, the 3.75 or whatever the stated rate is, without considering essentially subtracting out expected inflation to get a look at the real rate. And if you do that, and then, the data on the blog will illustrate this, you see that that real rate in, at the short term is coming down. So because expected inflation is going up. And so again, that's stimulative, even if the nominal rate doesn't move. If they just stand still, the Fed is that is stand still, that real rate has a life of its own because of what we expect inflation to be.
Do you see any indications that the Fed is signaling that would indicate they're aware of this and will take action, and that they care about that 2%, that they care about that mandate to control prices or to stabilize prices?
And I should say I do, but I want to just preface this with just really crediting that question. The fact that you just asked me this is the problem they have, right? That you are on public radio debating whether or not they care about the 2% target is precisely the sorts of conversations that fuel increases in expected inflation. So that's why this is so timely. But yes, I think they do realize it. I think Kevin Warsh and the other members of the board now are being very careful in the way they communicate. their stance, but we know what they didn't do the last time they met, the first time that Chair Walsh led the board. They did not lower rates, and he never promised he would, but there was some suggestion during the nomination process that he would lean in that way, and he has not yet. And that to me made a lot of sense. So I think they are aware of a need for a wait and see, and other members of Fed leadership, including, our own Neel Kashkari, has recognized this need to sort of wait and see to some extent, and others have as well. So I think they are aware of it. Of course, they're aware of. Of course, they're aware of the theory underlying it. They understand all that, and their job is very difficult. But this signaling to the rest of us that they are very determined to achieve 2% low and stable, I think, could be strengthened.
Once again, you can find Joe Santos on the Substack platform. Search for Joseph M. Santos, or if you like, go to our website and click on the link under this story. That's at sdpb.org/in the moment. That's our conversation for today. I hope that it served you. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening.